Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. All right, we're back. It's 13 after. Thank you very much for joining me today. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our phone number is 888-822-8255, toll-free coast-to-coast. Sarah Calvert, as I promised you, is our special guest. She is our good friend, a member of our Brain Trust. She is our resident small business attorney, and that's what she does every day for a living. She is the principal and the founder of Calvert & Associates PC, a law firm which she started in 91 in Fairfax, Virginia. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Good morning from Virginia, Jim.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us. Did you know that on this day in 1776...
You've always got one for me, Jim. I don't know.
The Continental Congress authorized the name United States. Today's a red-letter day in the history of America.
Excellent. Excellent to know that today.
On today. And also, on the same day in 1850, California becomes the 31st state. All you folks listening in out of California, especially those of you who are listening over my Needles, California station out there, happy birthday to California. That's today, 31st state. Also, I know you're a big bowler, Sarah, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Today, the American Bowling Conference was formed in New York City in 1895.
I once bowled a 15.
You did?
Yes.
As much as that, huh?
Yes.
Would you keep one out of the gutter or something?
Hitting it in the gutter, yeah. No, and my husband.
Well, I guess you had to have two out of
my boyfriend never took me again, and I don't understand it. He thought it was a waste.
Sarah, let's talk about the legal issues involved in the sale of a business. Now, as you know, and as my audience knows, one of the things we've covered quite extensively on the show before over the last couple of years has been how to buy and sell a business, how to prepare your business for sale,
mm-hmm.
how to prepare to buy a business, how to prepare to sell a business. Just about every way you can look at it, we've talked about it, how to do the due diligence, and on with our good friend Russ Brown, who's another member of our Brain Trust and who is a business broker. And we're actually in the middle of another series that's involved in buying and selling a business. Quite extensive body of work that we've accumulated over the last couple of years with Russ Brown. But what we have not done, which because he and I really aren't necessarily qualified to do it, is we have not talked about the legal, very much about the legal ramifications of the sale of a business. And that's what you actually have put together a program that you call Buying or Selling a Business, the Top 10 Legal Issues.
That's right. You know, it's no fun without talking about a lawyer in the midst of all this.
You know, it's just, how can you have a real fun conversation without bringing the lawyers in?
Without bringing the law and the lawyers in.
Well, I got to say, if we had to bring a lawyer in, Sarah, I would want it to be you.
Oh, why, thank you, Jim.
Let's talk about what's the first law, so to speak?
Well, the first thing I like to tell clients on either side of the table is that this is not a real estate deal. There's a lot of people who relate it to a real estate. It's like buying a house. Buying a business is like buying a house. And that's not really true. You know, when you buy a house, there's pre-printed forms for everything, and everybody just hands you things to sign.
The HUD-1 form.
The HUD-1 forms, and the sales contracts are usually negotiated long before by the real estate brokers in the area.
For the most part, it's almost just a formality of sitting down and signing the papers.
Exactly.
In a real estate deal.
Yes. And many of us have done it many times, and most of us don't hire a lawyer to read a contract that's used in everyday work.
Right.
The business deal is extremely different. I always tell my clients, as creative as you want to make the deal, so long as I can get it down on paper, we can write it.
Right.
So it can be a hugely different deal each and every time we do them. We probably do anywhere between 4 and 10 business sales a month in our office.
I knew that you did a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know whether you know that or not.
Well, it is a lot because I work with a lot of brokers.
But for one firm, and you have a relatively small firm.
I have a small firm.
So for one firm to do that many business closings a month is a lot. In fact, I know a lot of law firms, a lot of not too large law firms that don't even close that many real estate deals a month.
Well, that's...
But you know, and I know your point is really important when you're talking to realtors who have either they're closing a business deal, mm-hmm. and they don't really know what they're doing,
or they're
working on becoming a business broker. I know this is really important for you to talk to them about this.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure Russ is a wonderful business broker, and he's got the experience. But most people that are hired to help people buy a business or help people sell a business are former real estate brokers
yep.
who've gone into this industry. And I train real estate brokers, which is one of the reasons I have a lot of contacts and do a lot of closings.
Well, Russ, that's not Russ's background. He's not a realtor by background. But but the thing is, and people may be saying, well, how could this be happening? Well, the reason that it happens is, With most businesses that are to be sold, there's a piece of real estate involved.
That's right. There's usually either a big office lease involved, or a purchase of a building, or a standalone. There's very often big pieces of commercial real estate. So you just need to make sure that the realtor you're dealing with is not some unfortunate soul who took up real estate 2 years ago, knows all about how to sell a house, has never sold a piece of commercial property or a business before, because they're not similar transactions.
I have seen real estate deals that closed, and the business was thrown in for nothing.
Yes,
I promise you, I saw that once, at least once.
And I've seen business deals where the business was sold and the real estate was thrown in.
Well, no, that's true. That can happen.
Yep, that can happen.
But there are different. They're definitely different animals altogether.
Yes, that's correct. And that's just as long as you realize that as a potential purchaser or a potential seller, then the people that you're working with, you'll know to watch out for that slipping into the real estate deal as opposed to keeping it as a business deal.
Well, one of the things that happens is typically, now any closing table can be a volatile situation. Any closing table can become contentious, and you know, there are real estate deals, especially the larger the real estate deal, the more likely things could break down at the closing table.
Yes.
But typically, if you just bought a house or a small commercial piece of property or something like that, typically, as you said earlier, things are pretty much nailed down before you get to the table, and it's a matter of signing the documents.
Yes.
With a business sale, a lot of times there are new things that come to light at the closing table.
You know, my staff hates to schedule closings because there's never enough hours to get all the details
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
When we sit down, we always schedule at least 2 hours at a closing table for you know, the signing of the papers can take 20 minutes.
Right.
But you come to the negotiating table and, you know, these pieces of equipment don't work that we just walked through to inspect. And you didn't give me the keys to that closet over there.
Right.
And wait a minute, you said you were going to bring the client list. You didn't bring it.
Absolutely. Stand by, Sarah. Folks, we're going to talk a little bit more about this issue, about that this is not a real estate deal, and then move on to asset sale versus corporate sale when we come back right after these messages. We are back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. If you have a question or a comment, 888-822-8255. That's your phone number, 888-822-8255. Jim Pearson is on the board. He's the best there at the network, Talk America Radio Network, in beautiful downtown Canton, Massachusetts. And he'll take your call and put you through to me and our special guest and our good friend, Sarah Calvert. And we're talking about the top 10 legal issues involved in the sale of a business. And Sarah, we were just talking about the fact that selling a business is not the same thing as selling a real estate. And one of the things that I have seen happen before are people who, like a realtor, who decides to be sort of a wannabe business broker,
mm-hmm.
and because there is a piece of real estate involved, that person goes to the closing table thinking that they've got everything done, and they get there with the attorney, and everything starts breaking down.
Yeah, it's a very sad thing. You know, it's very interesting. Almost anybody can buy a house that they can get a loan for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see a house, you pick the house out, okay, that's the one I want. It's very different when you're buying a business, because you can want and you can afford and you could probably get the financing to buy a lot of different businesses. But whether those businesses are a good match for you is a wholly different topic. I mean, you know, it's something that people spend years trying to determine what, you know, the best business for them would be to be in. And since there's a lot of that on the buyer's side, and there's a lot of angst and emotion on the seller's side, This is their baby they're giving up. In a lot of cases, there's extreme emotional attachments.
Yep.
These deals are so vastly different than a piece of property that it's kind of scary how different it is.
Well, that's one of the things that Russ Brown and I have spent a lot of time talking about is how important it is for you to do all the due diligence. In fact, we did one whole series, several shows on just the due diligence process.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're thinking about buying a business, and then you know you've really got to spend the time on this. And if you are selling a business to someone who is not spending the time on this, then your chances of success are not very great, because unless they've just got a sack full of money that they can throw at you, which is not likely, you may dance around with this person for a long time, only to find out at the table or near the closing table that this person doesn't have the critical mass to buy this thing.
You know, you get to it's much more unusual with a mortgage and financing. Usually everything's dealt with, but so many of these have so many components of the seller taking back portions of the sale.
Right.
Sometimes the entire, you know, amount of the sale, less maybe a small down deposit, that you find that it's so much more critical that the buyer and seller be intimately involved in each other's business affairs.
Absolutely. Let's talk about number two, asset sale versus corporate sale.
This is a big debate in the legal and broker community. A lot of people like to buy whole corporations. They want the corporate name and the corporate situation. I really discourage most people from looking at buying a corporation itself. You are much better off buying its assets,
mm-hmm.
and then making sure
rather
than the stock. You talked about a funny word called due diligence, and so mm-hmm. since you've talked a lot about it, I'm assuming a lot of your listeners know what we're talking about. But due diligence is the process required to make sure that everything is as the seller says it is. Because the sellers can say a lot of things. I know a lot of sellers that keep two cash registers, two sets of books, one for the IRS and mm-hmm. one for the real world. And you need to be
no names, though.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I'm not naming any names, that's for sure. But there are, because there are so many situations where the seller is not quite accurate, and the difference between his accuracy and his lack of accuracy may be the entire profit margin that you were counting on to run that business.
Yep.
And so because of that, I suggest that people, number one, look at an asset sale first. Now, there are certain circumstances where a corporate sale is the only sale you can do. If there are certain licenses and privileges attached to that corporation that you can't easily get yourself, in my area, there's a lot of government contractors, and getting a novation on some of those contracts is very difficult. So in a lot of cases, government contractors will swallow another corporation whole.
Yep.
and be able to take over those agreements.
There is a term that the politicians used to use when dealing with Russia, and I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes, but it's something like trust but verify.
Yes.
It's okay to trust the person that you're buying a business from, but you also must verify.
Yes.
Stand by, Sarah. We're going to talk about this a little bit more when we come back, folks, a little bit more about assets versus corporate sale. Then we're going to move into something called financial fraud and also failure to investigate. We are back. It's 33 After. I'm Jim Blassie, the Small Business Advocate, and Sarah Calvert is our special guest. She is our resident small business attorney and a member of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust. And Sarah, I would like for you to give us your website and your phone number if anyone would like to contact you.
Sure. It's www.calvert, C-A-L-V-E-R-T, and Associates, all spelled out, .com. And the 800 number is 1-800-526-5665.
But if someone in your area, in the Northern Virginia area, wanted to call you directly, mm-hmm. that number is
703-591-5315.
Thank
just
you,
just tell
sir.
Me that Jim sent you, and I'll chat with you. No bill in the mail.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for doing that. For
no
the first,
problem.
And that's obviously we need to clarify. That's for the initial interview.
Just for the initial chat and questions. Yeah.
Okay, now we're talking about the top 10 legal issues involved in the sale of a business, and we're on number two, is the asset versus corporate sale. You said something a minute ago that I wanted to make sure we clarify. You said sometimes people want the corporate name and all that kind of stuff. You can still buy the corporate name, the company name, I should say.
The trademarks, the logo.
The trademarks, the phone number, all that stuff. You can still buy all that stuff without having to buy the stock and keep that corporation, that particular entity,
mm-hmm.
corporate entity, running that company.
Yes, that's correct. That corporate entity is the owner of assets, and that's really what we're talking about, is just the sale of the assets. But client lists can be assets, and even contracts in many or in most situations can be assigned.
You can, if it's ABC Carpet Cleaning Inc.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could buy those assets and that name,
yes.
Dissolve that corporation and form it as ABC Carpet Cleaning of Northern Virginia Inc.
Absolutely.
And continue to march and then do business as ABC Carpet Cleaning.
Absolutely.
Just like the old company did.
Yep, and it happens all the time, and this is why you see the big signs under new management, but the actual name of the business never changed.
Exactly. but the old entity, mm-hmm. that the old literal legal owner of that company is gone.
Yes.
It's been dissolved.
And that corporation probably doesn't exist anymore except to receive your payments.
And the reason that you probably want to do that, Sarah, is because?
Because you don't want to do the due diligence involved in accepting the entire financial, tax, legal lawsuit history of a corporation.
There could be a workers' comp claim about to happen out there. There could be a lot of things.
I usually find that as they're about to lay off all their employees and you're not going to take them on, there's a tremendous amount of hard feelings amongst employees. So that's a big area of potential liability.
So you want to insulate yourself from that.
Yes, you want to say I'm only accepting what's on this piece of paper as a list of assets that are transferring, and I've listed the contracts, I've listed the pieces of equipment I want, and I've made sure they're all free and clear from liens. And nothing else is coming over.
Mm-hmm.
Your bad history with the IRS is not coming over to haunt me. Your bad history with the Workman's Comp Board is not coming over to haunt me.
Exactly. Let's move on to number three. You call it financial fraud.
Yes, I'm calling it two things, depending on who you're, whether you're the buyer or the seller. Financial fraud and failure to investigate. What I'm talking about is that there are a lot of sellers out there who, in order to sell their business, wish to rely on documents that they have never filed with the IRS or their local taxing authority.
Hmm.
This is the guy that kept the two registers or the two sets of books, and he wants or she wants to show you a set of books that are not legitimate books. And frankly, as I'm sure you've talked about with Russ before, this is fraud.
Mm-hmm.
This is documents that, while they may say this is truly what goes on in their business, you want no part of that. And so you need to be very, very sure that you have a good, qualified CPA take a look at your financials. Make sure that the business you're buying will support not only you and the business itself, but repayment to the seller. So you're adding an extra, fee and dollar on top of this. You're either repaying yourself for the cost of the business or repaying an actual loan that the seller is going to give you. So you need to make sure that those numbers will support all of this, and they will support it on what was reported.
Right.
And what was actually paid taxes for.
Don't believe what someone tells you about the finances.
Yes.
You must verify the financial information.
Yeah.
If you can't verify it, then go find another business.
It's interesting. I just had a lady in my office. She's selling a business, and she said to me, Sarah, I don't want to reveal my tax returns. She's a sole proprietorship, and she does not want to reveal her entire tax return because she's been filing a Schedule C for her business.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't think there's any way around that, because any legitimate business owner who is legitimately looking to purchase a business is going to want to see those things. And they're going to want to see the expenses plus all the income.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't think that as a seller that you're going to get away from revealing these financial details, even if they happen to intrude on your personal tax situation.
Exactly. So. All right, number four is investigate, investigate, investigate.
Yeah, there's almost no way. There's no simple way to buy a business. That's one of the reasons we say it's not like a real estate deal. Who is the owner of the business? Sometimes I go into some deals and people tell me, okay, this is the owner of the business. When I ask them to prove it, I find out there's three other shareholders and nobody ever got their buy-off to sell this business.
Right.
So, the main shareholder maybe thinks he's going to buy out the other shareholders at the closing table. But unless they've got a deal, I can't close a business like
mm-hmm.
that. Make sure you understand the industry that you're getting into. Maybe the reason the owner's getting out is because they're about to become obsolete.
Right.
I've seen businesses where that is the case. I had a business sale that was involved in the insurance industry in the auto glass. And in our area, apparently, the insurance companies had closed out certain businesses and were not going to refer auto glass workers.
They'd lost their franchise, so to speak, for those lines.
And that business was worthless.
Yeah, absolutely. Stand by, Sarah. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about getting the money. Big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
888-822-8255. I'll be right back with Sarah Calvert. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, heroes. It's 44 After. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Sarah Calvert is our special guest and our good friend, our small business, a resident small business attorney for our show. And we're talking about the top 10 legal issues involved in the sale of a business. But before we get back into that, Sarah, do you know what today? I know I've asked you a trivia question already or two before, but you know what today is, don't you? The date.
It's 9/9/99.
Now,
supposedly, you know, some of our computers are supposed to be not happy with that date either. But
because
so far,
that's the, yeah, because that's the end command. 9/9/99 is the end command for a lot of programs, and I've been hearing about this now for, you know, way over a year. But if you think about it, the dates are not 9/9/99; they're 09/09/99.
Good point.
So it's really three nines at the end there, not four nines.
Okay.
So the things I've been reading about lately tell me that it's really not going to be a big deal.
Oh, good.
So
I'm happy about that.
He says as everything shuts down around you.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's talk about number five: getting the money.
Okay, we need to make sure that the seller. We're talking about the seller's point of view now. Gets money from the buyer. Well, Sarah, of course the seller's going to get money from the buyer. But you're going to find in most of these deals that you're going to have to carry back some sort of financing. And when you do that, you're taking a chance with the seller, with the buyer's financial situation.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be a good credit risk. If a bank wouldn't lend to them, why should you?
Now, this is where the seller finances part of the sale.
Yes, and this is in probably 95% of the deals I do. There is some portion that is carried back,
yep.
Maybe a small 10%, or it may be as much as 90%.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't get a bank loan. But you as a seller need to act as though you were a bank. You need to get liens. You need to get financing statements. You need to file a lien against not just the business assets, but the personal assets of the person that you are giving this business to until they finish paying you.
Do the paperwork
get
a professional like Sarah to help you do the paperwork.
Absolutely. There's a lot of paperwork involved in that.
Absolutely.
And acting like a bank.
All right. Number six, recourse for the buyer if something goes wrong.
Okay.
Now, what could possibly go wrong, Sarah?
Well, you know, I owe you
other
money.
Than about 1,000 things.
Yeah, really. I owe you money now because we just did a deal that you took back some money. And I find out after I get in the business that I can't make any money, so I'm not going to pay you that loan back.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? Are you going to be able to take back the business? Are you going to be able to foreclose on my business assets or my personal assets? You need to make sure that there is an ability if you're the buyer and the seller has sold you a business and they lied about their financials and you didn't know about it,
mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that you have an ability to offset your payments to him. Why am I going to pay this guy who lied to me?
I know a case where a car dealership was sold.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2 or 3 years after the sale went through, the purchaser, things weren't going as well as he expected, and he was able to prove that the numbers that he was given by the seller were actually fraudulent.
Yeah, that's
took the guy to court and recovered some of his money.
That is probably the most common way to undo a business sale, is to prove that the numbers that were given to you by the seller were fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
I always attach the last 2 years' tax returns and the last two financial statements to the actual closing document so we can say what everybody relied upon and looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, I think it hopefully makes the sellers be a little more aggressive in making sure their numbers are correct, and it makes the buyers understand that I relied on this, and if there's ever a lawsuit, this is what we're all talking about.
All right, let's move on down and talk about failure of the new business owner to protect their assets.
You are now a business owner, even though you bought a business and didn't start one from scratch. And you probably didn't buy the corporation if you listen to our advice. So right now, you need to incorporate your new business. You've got assets you just purchased, so you're starting off with assets. You've got to immediately protect those. If you do business for a while as a sole proprietor, any contracts that you brought in, any assets that you brought in, could potentially be lost if a problem arises in the period of time that you're not a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So I like people to buy with a corporation. They may do an initial letter of intent saying, hi, I, John Smith, am going to buy the assets of ABC Corporation, but John Smith needs to assign that contract to a new entity, a new corporation. Make sure he's got that corporate protection.
Right. And that could be an S or a C corporation, either one?
Either one.
Or an LLC.
Yep.
Some states may not even have an LLC, so make sure that you get that incorporated. I moved too quickly because there was one other thing on what happens if something goes wrong.
Okay.
You like to talk about keeping a certain amount of money back in escrow. I don't think
that's true. I didn't mention that.
And that was my fault.
Yeah, I like to have an escrow if there's particular issues. For example, a lot of people have these stupid credit card machines. And getting those leases of those stupid credit card machines transferred over can take 2 and 3 months. So if we don't want to hold up the closing for that, I'm going to put money in escrow to make sure that gets done. And the seller doesn't get that piece of money until that equipment gets cleared
right.
of its lien. So there's issues for that. There's issues for making sure for 90 days after closing that the taxes get paid. Because on the day you close, there are obligations that haven't yet come up for the seller. You know, they don't yet owe that workman's compensation insurance for the back area. They don't yet owe a lot of employee taxes. To make sure those get paid, I'm going to escrow money, and then when it all gets paid and he gives me the receipts, I'm going to be able to release that money to the buyer.
You know what? One of the biggest things that happens in a deal like this is that one or the other, typically the seller, puts pressure on the buyer to close quickly.
Yes, well, that's always it.
And that precludes having enough time to, and then you get an excited seller, excited purchaser who wants to close. They can't wait to get into this business, and you as a professional have to try to slow them down a little bit.
Yep, that's right.
That's the problem. All right, folks, we're going to be right back after these messages. It's 50 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're talking about the top 10 legal issues involved in the sale of a business. Stay with us, please.
Discouraged, I don't know. Every time I see a tenfold, out of my pocket it goes.
This is the payoff right here.
Coming
up right here.
I hate taxes.
We're back. It's 54 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I like that song. That's Robert Cray. I hate taxes, which is something you've got to pay attention to when you're buying a business, don't you? You got to make sure that the seller has paid the taxes, unless you. Let me ask you this question. You're buying a business. You buy the business. You bought the assets, not the stock in the company.
Mm-hmm.
You dissolve the other company, but you find out that there were taxes due. Is there any way possible that the IRS or the state could come in and put a lien on inventory that was owned by the other company but now is now owned by you?
Almost always if there's sales taxes owed.
Only if there's sales tax.
Usually, at least in the states that are surrounding mine that I've done business deals in, if there are sales taxes owed, the inventory or the equipment even of the business are subject to liens.
What about income tax or
usually not income
or
tax
or payroll tax or anything like that.
Payroll taxes and income taxes are specific to that corporation, so you can always go say, "There's the guy that owes
you
the money."
The reason I say that is because those things often take several months to actually catch up with someone.
And that is the worst.
But sales tax catches up with you real quick.
But the good thing is, most taxing authorities will give you a letter that says this person is cleaning up.
Okay, which you need to do. All right, I just want that, when we were talking about taxes there for a second, Robert Cray was singing about that. I want to ask you that quick question. Non-compete issues, you've got to get that down in writing, haven't you?
You got to get it in writing, and this is the kind of non-competes that stick. So if you're a seller, expect to be put out of your industry for a couple years, 3-5 years.
Yep.
If you're a buyer, you've got to ask for this, otherwise your seller can go and open up a business tomorrow and compete again.
Not only get a non-compete agreement, but expect to defend it.
Yes, and they are much more easily defendable. This is not one of those situations where they're difficult. They're not employees. This is a business deal, and the courts understand that, and they understand that you need that protection.
Make sure your attorney writes that document, because you know what I tell the attorney? When they're writing that document, I say, look,
you're going to be in court with it.
I want you to write the document that you can defend, and I'm expecting specific performance out of you if we have to defend this.
That's right.
I put the pressure back on the attorney.
Yep.
Anything wrong with that?
Nothing wrong at all. I think you should rely on your professionals, and more importantly, you should have those professionals involved in the deal.
Which is number nine.
Yeah, this is not brain surgery that you can do yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This is not take out your own liver time. This is the time to spend the money, be penny wise, and pound foolish is not going to pay off in this deal. This is not something, there's a kit out there that you can buy from Staples that's going to fix this for you.
Absolutely.
You absolutely, positively need to have the backing of an attorney for you. Don't let one of these shysters, and unfortunately they're my profession, so I know them, tell you that they can represent both sides of a business transaction.
Yeah, they can't do it.
It can't be done.
They can't do it. I had one recently where they tried to do that, And I knew, I told them it wouldn't work. And within about two meetings with the buyer and the seller, you know, it was obvious that it wasn't working. And I had to say, hey, guys, this is not working.
The interests of the buyer and seller are vastly different. Each party needs to ask questions about their own issues.
Exactly.
And needs to be told. It needs to be educated as to what they need to do.
Absolutely.
The other one that I think is absolutely critical is a good small business CPA.
Right.
I can't tell you how important it is to have somebody look at those numbers and tell you not only will it pay your salary and will it run the business and make a profit for you, but can I pay back the loan I took out to get this business?
Sarah, that's got to be the last word. Number 10 is franchises. We'll talk about that another day.
Okay.
Have a good one, Sarah. You did great.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Sarah Calvert, ladies and gentlemen. Got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.